Welcome back, baseball fans, to episode 68 of the Nats GM Show, the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the Baron of all baseball podcasts. The Nats GM Show is proudly sponsored by No Halftime and the No Halftime app. So you ask, what is No Halftime or the No Halftime app? Well, you're staring at your weekly fantasy opponent and thinking to yourself, I would love to challenge just one of his players, not his entire team. But your fantasy sports service doesn't allow you to. Now you count on the new No Halftime app. The No Halftime app allows you to create individual challenges using players or teams. For example, you can pit Bryce Harper versus Mike Trout, Miguel Cabrera versus Manny Machado, or Chris Davis versus Matt Kemp. Creating a challenge takes seconds, and accepting challenges is even easier. No Halftime challenges can be private or public and created for the MLB, NFL, NBA, NHL, PGA, and other sports. Join today and get started. Real money and fantasy supremacy awaits you. And now you can also try No Halftime for free with $0 challenges. Visit NoHalftime.com for more information and to download the No Halftime app for your iPhone or Android device. Receive a bonus by entering in the promo code NATSGM at signup. Receive a free t-shirt when you make a deposit. No Halftime, where the fantasy sports season never takes a break.
This is Donovan Dijak from Ring of Honor, and you are feasting your ears on the Nats GM Show.
And now, I am proud to welcome to the Nats GM Show one of the biggest New York Met fans I know, a star with Evolve Wrestling, the co-host of Busted Open Radio on Sirius XM, and the man known as the most hated man in pro wrestling, Larry Dallas. Larry, welcome to the Nats GM Show.
Hey, thank you for having me on. It's a nice change of pace to go from talking pro wrestling every week to being able to come on and talk to a Nat. Even though it's a Nationals podcast, it's okay to come on and talk a little Nats Met, especially with the big series looming. I'm okay with my appearance just for that reason only.
Well, I'm very excited to have you on. I'm a big fan of your work, obviously, on Sirius XM, and it's kind of a treat to finally be talking to you after hearing your voice for so long.
Hey, I appreciate the compliment, man. It's nice to get out there and diversify the portfolio, as they would say, in financial investments, and talk a little baseball mixed in with the wrestling.
Well, and I couldn't think of anybody better to talk about with the, like you said, the upcoming Mets and Nats series. We're going up to Queens, I guess, in a couple of days, depending on everybody listens to this. And then I guess we have you guys coming into town the following week. So kind of a pretty big series to start off. We've got the Nats, I guess, up a game as we're recording this. And I want to start with just your general feelings on the state of the Mets right now.
The Mets, was that the Mets or the Nats? You want my
the Mets.
Okay, the Mets. I mean, I saw the stat yesterday. I was watching the Mets. So we're taping this right now on Saturday afternoon. The Mets had just lost to Colorado last night with Harvey pitching and once again kind of imploding in the later innings. I saw a stat yesterday they put up on the TV, and I didn't even realize that the Mets were 19-3 at the time when they scored first in the game. And you're talking about a team with 21 wins. So it basically that they're 21-14, and 19 of those wins came from when they scored first. You know, 35 games into the season, they seem to be good at playing bully ball, especially when they're hitting home runs and beating up on bad pitching. But if they get down, they're not showing an ability to come back in games and win. Once they get down, they just seem to kind of, put their bats away for the day and call it a bad game. If they're either hitting home runs or they're getting shut out or they're not scoring a lot. It's very, very interesting to watch because the Mets past decade haven't been a home run team. And now all they're living and dying by the long ball, which is odd because you figured they'd be living and dying by the pitching all season.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, we're looking at I'll start in the outfield, and Cespedes is basically picked right up where he left off last season in Queens for you all, and Michael Conforto is, I guess he slowed down a little bit maybe the last week or so, but he's been more than a revelation. It's I mean, those two guys are just punishing the baseball.
Absolutely. I mean, Conforto has just been a breath of fresh air as a rookie. The Cespedes trade last year completely changed the entire culture of this team. We weren't going to win that division. I don't care how badly managed you guys were last year. We weren't winning that division last year without Cespedes coming over.
100% right. Yeah, 100%.
Because there was that series, what was it, that maybe it was, I want to say it was late August series or maybe an early September series where we swept you guys, and he just hit home run after home run that whole series. And that was just, you know, there was still a couple of games to go in that season, but that was like the fun. Those were nails in the coffin right there when we went in there and swept you guys, and it was Cespedes. You guys have been dominating us for years.
Yeah.
Cespedes changed the whole entire culture of the team.
So, I mean, he's been, and just the defense has been a little better in center field than I think we all expected, but, I mean, we look up today and he's got almost 1,000 OPS, you know, and just he's carrying the offense, frankly.
He's carrying the offense. He's very consistent with the bat. I mean, I know early off in the season he didn't start off as well as people wanted him to, and now with the contract, it's always going to, and it's New York, so the pressure's going to be there and the people going to get on him. But I am less worried about Cespedes than most players on the team. I think that he'll be consistent all year long, and I think he's clutch. He slowed down the playoffs last year, and obviously your new national, Daniel Murphy, kind of carried us there for a little bit, but Cespedes is clutch whenever he needed him. So he's the guy I'm like, he's one of those guys that I'm not going to worry about, and I won't say a bad thing about him all season, because at the end of the day, he chose to come to us instead of going to you guys, which is music to my ears.
And maybe the biggest surprise to me has been that your rebuilt middle infield. You signed Estrubel Cabrera, former Nat, traded for Neil Walker, and God, both of those guys are punishing the baseball.
It makes you not miss Murphy, because I know Murphy was hitting real well early on in the season, and people were calling New York radio. They go, oh, you know, Daniel Murphy's killing it. It's like this defensive upgrade between Walker and especially Cabrera has been there for so many plays early on, and when they signed him in the offseason, people were groaning because everyone thought that the Wilpons, that was going to be like the only signing they made this on the offseason. And people were just ripping it apart because I think he came from the Rays last year. And just defensively, that defensive tandem, because last year, you know, what really hurt us, especially in the World Series, is our defense on the infield.
Yeah.
And now our defense has gone up so much that they have more range. It protects the pitchers a little bit more. Neil Walker has just he's just been a beautiful addition to the team. As has Cabrera. I've been so happy with both those guys on the team. I love Daniel Murphy, but I don't miss Murphy because I have Walker and Cabrera out there in the infield.
Are you worried about those guys sustaining this going forward, or you think this is, you know, for real?
I'm worried about everyone sustaining things going forward. Especially when you're just hitting home runs all the time. I think that's going to slow down eventually, and guys need to start hitting for averages. I know a lot of people aren't fans of Moneyball, just, you know, and not stealing bases and just, you know, getting hits and getting on base, doing all this stuff, drawing walks. I've seen so many Yankee teams that live and die by the home run ball, and it rarely works out in the postseason. And at this point, the team's built for a postseason run, and that's what you're going to be judged on this season. So it doesn't matter if they hit a bunch of home runs the first couple months of the season. If we don't get out there and stay consistent and get into the playoffs and do it then, you're not going to remember anything that anyone did in the regular season. It's going to be about the fact that the team failed when it mattered most in the postseason. That's how New York is.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think all sports are like that, though. I don't think it's just New York, but I think the spotlight's probably magnified much bigger.
Yeah, because we got 24/7 sports radio. And we got our own networks that talk just local sports, and it's just we got two sports stations. You got ESPN New York, you got WFAN, you got SNY and YES, and you got all MSG. You got all these local sports channels. You can't get away from New York sports. If there's a bad time, if my team loses a big game, I'm one of those guys that doesn't turn the radio on for 3 days.
Let me ask you about maybe the best home run in certainly in Mets this year, but certainly in Major League Baseball, I think, as well. Bartolo's bomb last weekend.
Oh, Bartolo's bomb was amazing. I was at the Evolve show, unfortunately, because we had the Evolve show last Saturday when that bomb got hit. Or was it either Friday or Saturday? I was at the Evolve show when that got hit. He is so much fun to watch. He's like a cult hero in New York now because every time he gets the hit, and the helmet comes off the side of his head, or because every time he swings to the fences, and it's this 42-year-old guy that looks like he's playing. It looks like one of my friends playing beer league softball, and he's just plodding around the base. It took him 31 seconds to get around to touch all the bases on his home run. That was the greatest. Did you hear the call? Did you hear the New York broadcaster calls on that?
I did. Yeah.
It was overhyped. Absolutely. Is it one of the great moments of baseball history? Absolutely not. But it was 100%. The feeling of euphoria as a Mets fan when you see Cologne hit a home run, and then Syndergaard hit two the other day. So the Mets pitchers can rake when they need to. It's interesting. I've never seen a pitching staff that's a danger to hit a home run like this staff is. You got to think a lot of these guys are heavy throwers or hard throwers, so you would think they have the power with the bat too if they can ever connect.
So is Bartolo the most popular player on the Mets right now?
It's probably a toss-up between him and Syndergaard.
Okay, I can see that.
Cologne is definitely the cult hero, but I think as much as DeGrom and Harvey get all the accolades or all the attention, I think Syndergaard is the the dyed-in-the-wool Mets fan's favorite player right now, probably.
Gotcha. That's interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that necessarily. Although he's probably my favorite guy to watch pitch if I'm going to watch one guy on that staff.
It's all because when he brushed back the Royal player in the World Series. I forget the player's name. When he brushed him back.
Right, yeah. I'm blanking on the player, too, yeah.
And he said, I'm 90 feet away, anytime you want to come at me, whatever it was. That bravado right there just made him an instant hero to New York fan.
Nice. Very nice.
He was the one that they thought, when we played the Dodgers this past week, everyone thought Syndergaard would be the one that would plunk Utley.
Oh, yeah.
So if there's any Met pitcher that we trust in to go out there and be that kind of that bulldog, that pit bull, Syndergaard's the guy that the fan base is really, really behind. They rip apart Harvey all the time. DeGrom gets the credit of being the ace, but Syndergaard's the one everyone's in love with.
Well, it also doesn't hurt that he's built like a pro wrestler at 6'6", 260, or whatever he is either. I mean, he's a mountain of a human.
Yeah, the Mets pitching staff, but like, I think you're the best-looking pitching staff in baseball. I can't imagine, like if they go to other towns. I just picture this in my head. They get kind of jealous that it's not me. But they go like from like town to town, and like these stallions just walk into a new city, and people are just waiting there for them. And there's just women lined up at bars and restaurants with these stud pitchers that are going to make so much money one day in life, just coming to town for a weekend. It's got to be like I have no proof of this. I don't see anything reported on it. But I guarantee you, the women got to be lining up wherever those guys are every freaking weekend.
Yeah, I'm guessing anybody nicknamed Thor is not necessarily looking for a date on Saturday night. Yeah.
DeGrom's married. DeGrom's had a kid. Harvey's dating some model. If I was them, I would never get married. I would just ride this out. You're a New York starting pitcher. I would ride this out until you get traded somewhere else, and then I'd settle down. Like, if I got traded to Kansas City, then I'd settle down with a farm girl. But as long as I was like a New York starting pitcher and I was going to make hundreds of millions of dollars, I would just ride out the single leg as long as possible.
So you'd go with the Derek Jeter model then?
Derek Jeter's model should be the model that every professional athlete like holds up to. I mean, the guys now engaged to Hannah Davis, who's the smoking hot DirecTV chick before we knew who she was. She was a hot. I remember this because I remember tweeting out. I tweeted out on Twitter and I said, who is the smoking hot girl in the DirecTV commercials? And people immediately, because my fan base is awesome, they found her and they told me. I was like, so I started following her. Like 3 weeks later, she's dating Jeter. So I think Jeter was sitting in his house one day watching the TV, saw the DirecTV commercial, called up his agent, found out who this girl was, started dating her immediately. Jeter is, I don't even like the Yankees. Derek Jeter is like an idol to men everywhere, I believe.
Yeah, he really, and he did it the perfect way. He did everything just, yep, in the quiet and took care of business.
Yeah, he was the best at keeping himself. If you think about it, to be a star in New York and to never really have a bad word written about you takes a lot of self-control and talent and managing your brand properly and not putting yourself in a bad position.
Well, and he didn't do things like having a giant picture of himself as a half horse, half man either. That kind of helped.
Oh, I love A-Rod.
No, he's my favorite. There's nothing better.
I love A-Rod. A-Rod gets bad rap. I love A-Rod. I really do. I mean, I know he's like done steroids like his whole career, I guess, but A-Rod's still an amazing player, and he's such a great personality, and like people hate him here. But I don't know how heated A-Rod is nationally, but there's a lot of people that hate him. But the bottom line is they wouldn't have won the 09 World Series without A-Rod, the Yankees.
Very
true. They need to give him way more credit than they do. I love A-Rod.
Yeah, A-Rod is the greatest. I you know, I'm a big A-Rod guy, so.
And he was dating Torrey Wilson. Like, there's a wrestling tie in there, too. Out of all the people that you could ever picture a date, like a former wrestling diva, like, A-Rod was not the one I would pick.
No, not even close. Yeah, not even close.
And it's Torrey Wilson. But think about this fact for a second, right? There was a Playboy cover out there with Brock Lesnar's wife and A-Rod's girlfriend together.
Yeah.
I think that's amazing.
Well, or you could put Marvelous Mark Mero's ex in there if you wanted to go there as well. Yeah.
Mark Mero is the one wrestler Sammy Callahan wants to wrestle real bad. That's a God's honest true story. Sammy Callahan really wants to wrestle Mark Mero.
Oh, wow. I hope that happens just because of this podcast. That would be the greatest.
Yeah. If Mark Mero ever listens to this, because he happens to be like a Nationals or a Mets fan, or listens to Busted Open, Sammy Callahan really wants to wrestle you like at least one time in life. So he should probably try to make that happen.
I'd pay money to see that.
Only if you bring out the Bad Blaster, though.
The Johnny B. Bad Blaster.
Johnny B. Bad was an amazing wrestling character. Johnny B. Bad was the man. The TV title run back then, like 95. Johnny B. Bad was my dude.
Yeah, he was just the wrong era. He would have worked in a much different time.
Yeah, he was doing Shoot the Star presses, like, before people knew what they were.
Gosh. Mm. So
he was the first, like, heavyweight to do a Shoot the Star press on national TV.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah. So. Go ahead.
I said Mark Merrill was the man.
Oh, there's no doubt. Plus, he married Sable. So. All right. Let me circle back if I can somehow get us back to the Mets. So let me talk a little bit about some of the things that maybe you're concerned about. Matt Harvey is sitting today with almost an ERA at 5. You worried about him, or you think it's just a couple of bad outings kind of thing?
I'm starting to get worried because I think it's sort of affecting him psychologically. I heard a really weird thing. It was funny. I was listening to the radio when I was driving, and someone had said that the fact that he can't dip anymore is what's like causing him to lose his mojo, which sounds ridiculous. But I did point out, like, I'm willing to take anything that could possibly get him back on track. He starts off really well in these games, and then it just seems like when runners get on base or as the game goes on, they either figure him out or he's not pitching well from the stretch, and I just don't know what the problem is. But I also think that he's more vain than the other pitchers.
Okay.
And the success of the other pitchers, I think it's like almost like he's hearing the footsteps behind him.
Okay. I see what you're saying.
I think that I don't know him. I'm not a sports psychologist, but I almost feel like the fact that these other that Syndergaard is so good and Matt is a lefty and he's pitching really well, and DeGrom is the one who people call the ace of the staff. That Harvey's like the Marty Jannetty of the Mets pitching staff.
Yeah, the salad worker everybody overlooks. Yeah.
He was the Dark Knight. He was the savior of Gotham. He was going to be the one that saved New York Mets baseball because he was the first one to come up. Yeah. He was the first one to come up, and he did so much damage to his brand in New York last year when Boris came out and said that they wanted to put an innings limit on him and they didn't want him to pitch to the end of the season because at that point, the New York fan base turned on him. And now when you combine that with the bad performance, he's not – I'm sure. Listen, there was stories last year about him blocking people on Twitter during a start when he was in the dugout. He is one of those athletes that probably goes on Twitter after a game and vanity searches.
Oh gosh, yeah, that's not a good idea.
No,
particularly not in New York. Yeah,
it's a horrible idea. I mean, New York is Twitter's a cesspool to begin with.
Correct.
And then you add New York Twitter onto it, and that's like the worst cesspool you could possibly get involved in. It's worse than like wrestling Twitter at times, and he's just getting probably like lambasted and roasted after every bad start, and I really think he's vain enough where it affects him more than other people.
Wow. All right. How worried are you about the health of Mats and Syndergaard? I saw both of them just in the last 10 days or so have been complaining about elbows.
Mats has already had the Tommy John. I'm pretty sure Syndergaard hasn't. But Syndergaard pitched a really good game the other day. I think he had, 12 strikeouts maybe, or 10, I think he had double-digit strikeouts. And he pitched a good amount of innings, and he pitched really well. He won the game after he was complaining about his injury. I'm less worried about Thor. Matt bothers me because Matt has been injury-prone his early career. I mean, he's only been up for less than a year, and I feel like he's been on a DL 3 or 4 times at this point. And that scares me, especially because Matt's a lefty. We don't have another lefty in the rotation right now. So Matt's is more important. I mean, they're both important, but I'm more worried about Matt than I am Syndergaard at this point. But if we lose Syndergaard, I'm going to be on my rooftop crying.
Give me your take on David Wright a little bit right now. Batting average is a little rough, and the strikeouts are mounting, but then again, he's also getting on base, and the slugging's not too shabby. What are you seeing from David Wright?
As a two-hitter, I mean, he had a 360 on base or a 380 on base, something along those lines. You know, Granderson seems to get on base a lot. I think that's why you're seeing the Mets score early, because those guys have such good on-base percentage. That's why they're able to score first. I know that he strikes out a lot. Spinal stenosis, once your bat goes, I mean, I could tell you just from the limited wrestling I've done, I've seen people, once your bat goes or once your knees go, it's so hard to recover from that. You'll never be the same human being once your back or your knees go. And it's unfortunate because he was like Mr. Men. He stuck out through all those bad seasons.
Yeah.
After, you know, because after 2006, I mean, I think most Mets fans thought we were going to be good for a couple of years. And then you had the collapse of 07 and the collapse of 08, and then they just kind of went to the doldrums and bottomed out there for a while. And Wright was the guy that we kept. You know, we let Reyes walk, and he went to Miami, and then we kept David Wright. And now, when the team has a chance to be really good, unfortunately, his body's betraying him. I'll never be one of those guys that complains about David Wright, but I mean, I'm okay if you want to move right down to the 8-hole at some point during the season, but I'm not going to get on him too hard because right now, bottom line is we're in second place, we're still playing well, but he'll be one of those guys that if the team starts sliding or the Nationals get hot again, because I think Mets fans right now are forgetting about the fact that if you guys didn't play the Cubs, the standings would be a lot different right now.
Yeah, I mean, we took it on the chin, so to speak, last
weekend.
Everyone's
taken it on the chin from the Cubs. We haven't played it. We didn't beat the Cubs the whole regular season last year.
That's a really, really good baseball team that they've got going on right now, too.
And I mean, we might have swept them in the NLCS in 4 games, but they swept us for the regular season last year. So the fact that you guys got the Cubs first, that's the thing about a 162-game season. You get so wrapped up in the day-to-day of things, but the fact is, we haven't played the Cubs yet.
Yeah, so good point.
So we can beat the Cubs in the regular season, as far as I'm concerned, you got 4 games done with them already. We're 3 games done with them already. So it's like, you guys have already got the Cubs at least partly off your schedule. We still have to play in the whole boat. So I'm more worried about the Cubs coming up soon than I am David Wright right now. I think at the end of the season, his average will be about where it's supposed to be. And as long as his on-base stays where it is, I'm more concerned about the strikeouts because he's not seeing the ball and he's taking too many strike threes. That concerns me a lot more than his average so much because he's not. It's not like he's hitting the ball hard and get caught a lot. He's striking out a lot, and that bothers me more.
Gotcha. Final question I have for you, kind of on the Mets, is what is your biggest fear right now with the team, kind of going forward? And on the flip side, and I don't know how to properly word it, but what is maybe your biggest reason for optimism going forward?
My biggest fear is 1,000% injuries, because I feel like, especially with Harvey not pitching as well and DeGrom showing a little fatigue and Matt being on the DL now, like Logan Verrett comes in and has been a good spot starter for us. He's 3-0. He's been good out of the bullpen. But I'm more afraid of the fact that an injury to one of these pitchers or two of these pitchers can change the entire chemistry of this team. If we lose guys in the infield where our defense is strong, you know, if you lose a Neil Walker, you lose a Cabrera for any length of time, if you lose a Cespedes for any length of time, the whole dynamic of the team changes. My optimism is the fact that Cespedes seems like a winning player to me, and Conforto's youth, and Conforto seems like a winning player to me right now, and the Mets pitching, if they stay healthy, I don't believe that Harvey's going to be bad all season, and I think that the bottom line is you're still rolling out in a five-day rotation, you're still rolling out Harvey, Syndergaard, Matt, DeGrom, and then Bartolo. And Bartolo, at worst, is a 500 pitcher and a win-loss record every year. So if your worst pitcher is going to be 500, even though I'm not a big win-loss fan, I believe more in the ERA and the WHIP as being more valuable statistics than your win-losses. The fact of the matter is, if Colon's your fifth starter, you're doing pretty good in life.
Yeah, very true, particularly in the National League, especially, yeah.
You know, we're not in the American League. We're not. You know, we don't have the DH. By the way, I hate interleague play every day. On a sidebar rant there, I hate the fact that we have interleague play daily. I think that's the worst thing in the world that happened to baseball. But I digress with that.
I would be better with it if we just said, okay, every game's going to be DH or every game's not going to be. I would be better with the interleague every day.
I like the fact there's no DH. I like the fact the pitcher hits in the National League. I used to hate interleague play because when the Yankees were amazing, we had the Yankees six games a year, and you know, like the Nationals would have the Orioles,
right,
or the Marlins, the Rays. Like, I hated that aspect of it because our schedule got unfairly skewed to where we were playing the murderer's row Yankees six times a year, and no one else was. But now I just hate it because it makes everything seem less special to me.
Yeah, I can definitely see. I mean, you're certainly taking the tarnish or the luster off, you know, the All-Star game and certainly the playoffs by having teams already have played each other.
Yeah, and if the American League's going to play the National League all year, then make the World Series home field advantage based off the overall regular season record between the two leagues.
That's a good take. I'm not sure I've ever heard that take. That's a good take. It's definitely bad. I mean, we can't have it with the All-Star winner. I think that's a good idea. Yeah.
I mean, if they're going to be playing every day, then make it matter. Then make it count for something. Because the easiest way then to tell which league was the strongest league is based off the overall record between the leagues playing each other. And the bottom line is there's at least one series going on every day. So that means that, you know, we have a good sample size that the record will actually mean something. So let's do it that way and make it mean something in the regular season. You know, give the games more incentive and make those interleague games mean more. Because if you're playing late September baseball, and let's say it's, you know, the games are close, it gives you a reason to dial in on a otherwise, you know, unimportant game in September. Because if you're a team in the race and you're a fan of it, you're gonna be like, man, I want that World Series home field advantage. This, you know, this Marlins Mariners game in September 10th matters to me.
Yeah, and that could give a little pride to the leagues as well, and it also could avoid some of the tanking that we see in September, where these teams call up a bunch of players that maybe shouldn't be in the. You know, in the lineup as well. That's a good take.
I'd rather. I mean, if you're gonna, I don't like the alternating it every other year, but that's so arbitrary. Doing it in the All-Star game clearly is not working for anybody. It's not adding any interest to it. It's a little ridiculous because the All-Star game's an exhibition at best. At least the regular season games mean something. So at least then I can go, well, you know what? It's unfair because, you know, the NL West was really weak this year, but at least it's a legitimate statistic that I can base it off.
All right. I that's a really, really good opinion. I like that.
Thank you. Occasionally, once a day, I have a really good idea. I'm allowed to say out loud. And I get credit for it. It carries through the other 23 hours of my day.
I might steal that one. That's a good one. So
you're allowed to steal. This is your show.
Well, you know, I'll credit it anyway. So I guess one more final question before we jump off the Mets and the Nats is, I think they play six games here in the next, I don't know, 10, 12 days, whatever it is. Make a prediction. How many do the Mets win out of six?
Oh, man. For the fan base's mental health, they need to go 4-2 at worst. I shouldn't say that. 3-3, I think everyone would be okay with. 4-2 would be what would make people happy and comfortable. But for me, the fact, like, I've talked to other friends that are diehard Mets fans, and some of them say, you know, they want to be close the whole year long because the Mets don't do good as front runners. But for me personally, I can't discount the fact that the reason why we're a game out of you guys or half game out today is because of the fact that you guys have already played the Cubs. I want to win these next two series because I just think that they need to win them. They need to go 4-2. They need to show dominance because then I think the pressure switches back over to you guys because now you're the guys that lost it last year and you're the guys that now just lost two series in a row to the Mets. That changes it doesn't matter what you guys do against everybody else at that point. The media and all the talk and all the questions are going to be, can you guys beat the Mets in a series? And if it flips around the other way, New York is going to absolutely implode as far as a fan base, and I'm not sure how the team's going to handle it.
Yeah, you make a great point. You're touching on something. This is a big, you know, two series coming up in the next, like I said, next couple of weeks that normally you can ignore six games in May, but I think these have a lot more important than, you know, the traditional six games. I think you make a great point. Whoever comes out of these is certainly going to have some momentum going forward towards, you know, the beginning of the summer.
And realistically, one of us is going to be a wild card team, we think.
Yes. So, neither one of us wants that, to have the one-game playoff. I mean, we both want to make the playoffs, but we don't want to have our fate in one game is what I'm trying to say.
If we were the one game, I mean, just for me personally, if the Mets were the one game wild card, that day I'm going to be a nervous wreck the whole time.
Yep.
But my nerves are going to be so high, my blood pressure is going to be up. I'm going to be pacing back and forth like from the moment. It's going to be one of those days where I almost want to stay up the whole night the night before, so I can like sleep into like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. That way, I just have 6 hours of being awake before the game starts. Because I'm going to be such a basket case in a one-game playoff. I can't even imagine the pressure because we haven't been in it yet. As far as that one-game wild card, where it's literally for 162 games, now come down to that one game to get into the real playoffs. I would just be, oh my God, I'd be a nervous wreck.
Yeah, and then the second guessing will start. Should you have started Syndergaard, DeGrom, Harvey, if he gets right? I mean, and the same thing down here. Should we start Scherzer, Strasburg? Who should we start? I mean, that's just setting yourself up for a mess.
Right, and then that changed the whole narrative of the last week of the season. So instead of setting up your rotation for the playoffs so you can get things going for yourself against whoever we're going to be playing, because at this point I think we can all say that the winner of the wild card is probably playing the Cubs in a five-game series.
Yeah.
So, you know, not only are you playing the Cubs, you're playing the Cubs where you already use your ace.
Yeah, and you're going on the road. Exactly right.
And now you might only get your ace now for one game in a series instead of for two games in a five-game series. That changes the entire dynamic of everything.
And you've got to go against Arrieta, Lester, and, you know, the rest of their gang. No, that's a great point.
Especially because, I mean, at this point, the Cubs are going to come back down to earth, but they're so much better than everybody else right now as a regular season team that there's a realistic shot they're getting they're going to be the one seed. Which means if the Mets or the Nationals are in the wild card game, it means you're going up there and you're playing the Cubs at Wrigley in a short series. Oh man, that scares the crap out of me.
Yeah, with Arrieta going in game 1 and 4, most likely. Yeah, no problem.
Yeah. You get Arrieta twice, and you'll probably get Lester twice. And, you know, you'll have your actual ace of the staff probably for one game that series.
Yeah.
I mean, that's way far in advance, but that's where my mind is already, you know, going towards when I start thinking about why these next two series are so important with the Nationals.
Yeah, I think you've done a nice job actually hyping this series up more than even when I first started, you know, talking about the series and talking to you. You've got me pretty fired up.
Yeah, I am – it's appointment TV for me. It's one of those things where, like, you know, listen, it's a 162 game season, so you're not watching 162 unless you literally have a lot of free time and can make your schedule free every time the game's on, depending upon what time of the day it's on. But we haven't had, I mean, I don't know about you guys, you know, we had the Phillies as a natural rival there for a while. We obviously hated the Braves, but the Mets haven't been relevant since really 2008 up until last year. And now we have a chance for legitimate rivalry that rivals, for me, what I always saw my Yankee fans go through when the Yankees played the Red Sox every time.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Where it's appointment TV for me. And especially now when you look at the commingling of players, like the fact you got Daniel Murphy and you got the pitching staff and we got the pitching staff now too. You guys got Bryce Harper. We have nothing that touches that. But to me, these 19 games that we'll play all season, every single one of them is important. Especially because of the fact that you project both teams to be in the playoffs, and the one who really loses those 19 games has a good shot of probably being the wild card.
Yeah, just great takes there. Great point. So, Larry, I'm going to try to transition off this series if I can a little bit. I would be remiss if I didn't try to talk a little wrestling with you and pick your brain before I let you go. I'd like to first place I'd like to start is just kind of get your big picture take on the state of pro wrestling today. It feels like, you know, for the fans like ourselves and the diehards, it's a great time in wrestling, but yet it feels like the mainstream media is basically ignoring the whole, you know, the whole, everything, the positives that are going on.
I think a lot of that is because we're looking at it from a content standpoint, where we're sitting there and we're going, there's so much wrestling on TV now. Again, it reminds us of our youth, where, you know, every day there were so many different promotions you can watch. You know, Impact's on Pop, and Ring of Honor syndicated on Sinclair, and also has the Comet TV deal, and WWE has so much programming going on. You got the network, and you got all these other things going on. And Evolve is getting you know, the WWE rub with the Cruiserweight series, but the ratings for everything's at all-time lows or at 20-year lows. So it's not a business boom like it was in 98, 99, 2000, you know, that golden era of wrestling with Steve Austin and The Rock. We haven't made a transcendent star like that. You know, John Cena's on reality TV, and I think it's one of the lower rated programmings on that day that show's on. I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah. You know,
I'll watch Steve Austin on TMT. I watch Broken Skull Challenge every week, and I used to watch what do you have? He has like Redneck Island or something like that, which is one of his. I'll watch both of those shows, and I haven't watched John Cena's. And like, I love reality. I especially love competition reality TV. I think that the content, the quality of wrestling, and the athleticism is at an all-time high. But fan interest, for whatever reason, we haven't had anyone that transcends to a national level where the audience really, really talks about.
Now, is this a good time, speaking as a performer and a worker, how is this for the performers? I mean, I would think that there are a lot of jobs out there right now, but yet, like you said, you know, the interest isn't quite as high. The merchandise sales, I guess, aren't as big. Is this a good time for pro wrestlers? You know,
there's guys making a lot of money out there. I mean, there's independent wrestlers that are making really good livings out there based off the fact that, you know, social media can't be discounted on that, in the sense that, because I think in the WWE quarterly report, they talked about how, you know, 60% or 70% or something along those lines of their YouTube views was international.
Wow.
You know, so it's one of those things where Twitter allows you, and you have pro wrestling tees, and you have stuff like that out there, and I'll give wrestling fans this credit. They come to shows, and they'll spend money on merchandise or performers they like. And it's more streamlined than WWE, where WWE's taking up and you're getting a percentage of the royalties or whatever it is. When you're an independent wrestler, you're out there doing the show. I mean, you know, you're getting, you paid for your shirt to be produced or whatever, but then you're getting all the profit off it. It's going right through your pocket. So in that regard, if you can break through on the independent level and make it to a point where you're traveling every weekend and you're going to all these different towns, you can make yourself a really good living. And, you know, Lucha Underground pays really well. Ring of Honor, you know, there's a lot of guys there that are full-time wrestlers. They don't do anything else. Evolve has full-time wrestlers that don't do anything else. I mean, they split it over a bunch of different promotions. But to that standpoint, I mean, you probably don't have as many millionaires in wrestling as you did, you know, back in the day. But you can't discount the fact that people are making a living. So on that regard, the business is healthy. But just on a national interest level, it's not where it should be. But we're down to the diehards. And the diehards will spend money on things they care about.
Interesting point. So let me have you can, you know, use a magic wand, so to speak. How would you try to get interest greater, maybe on the mainstream?
I think you just need to start taking chances, and you need to, what they're doing now with like the new era stuff, they need to continue with that, and they need to take the bumps in the road that are going to come with trying to push new stars, because you need to try to see if someone can break through and become transcendent. But also, the thing that I think they miss out on is UFC, when it was very popular, like really popular, like every month, there was a time period, I mean, I forget the actual, these all runs into each other for me, but where my group of friends especially were getting together for every UFC pay-per-view.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right? And a major, major part of that was the countdown show. And I remember the network did the thing on the Shield going into SummerSlam a couple of years ago. Was it a year ago? Maybe 2 years ago, they did this Shield documentary about them, like, all heading into SummerSlam, and it was Rollins and Reigns and all this stuff going on. And I just think that you have 5 hours of programming on USA every week that you can literally dedicate an hour before a pay-per-view, on a pay-per-view week, to doing some sort of show like that, where you're literally just putting together these. I mean, they make the best. WWE makes the best video packages in sports and entertainment.
There's no doubt. There's actually, it's 100%, you're right. Yeah.
And you got all this programming time allotted to you. I would personally be very interested. I'd get into, like that the Raw after the Rumble in 2015 when the snowstorm prevented them from getting mm-hmm. the Boston. They did the sit-down interviews with Reigns and Brock, and they were freaking amazing. It was just perfect for what it was. Do stuff like that. Show guys training in a gym. See, try something different. See if it works. I don't know if it will, but I'm saying, I remember UFC was able to make you care about fights that you, when Anderson Silva was dominant, they made you believe in every challenger just by doing those countdown shows. Do that, you know, like, why am I not going to get on SmackDown for like the last hour of SmackDown next week? You know, a half hour or an hour video package highlighting AJ Styles' career and highlighting Roman Reigns and interviews of them both put in there and talking about how important the match is, and have Gallows and Anderson and the Usos and Ambrose and guys like that commenting on the importance of the match and all this stuff. That, to me, is how you build interest in a match sometimes, more than just your run-of-the-mill, like, oh, we're going to throw a tag team match out there on SmackDown, because we've seen that every month for 10 years. Do something different, see if people get into it. It may or may not work, but at this point, when you just have the diehards left, try something new.
Well, and you know, you know what the result is going to be of this, so try something else.
You have to, because you can sit there and say that MMA and WWE and boxing are completely different businesses, and you'd be right to a degree. But at the end of the day, people are still paying to see fights or matches that they care about personalities with. At the end of the day, that's still what people are paying to watch. Why people are watching, because they care about the performers in a ring or in a cage sitting and do what they do. It's still about people, personalities that get over with an audience and make them want to see them perform.
Yeah, at a basic level, you still got to care who wins and loses.
At the basic level, it's still the same thing. That's what it's always been, you know. That's why McGregor's so good, because he can literally get you to either think he's awesome or want to see him get his teeth knocked in. That was what wrestling was. And I'm not saying that's what wrestling is always going to be or what it always needs to be. You know, I'm not Jim Cornette. But what I'm saying is, still get back to the root of why we're watching something. And I think the root of why you're watching something is because you want to see an athletic competition between two athletes where you have someone that you're clearly into or someone that you're not into. And there's a purpose and a story behind why they care about what they're about to go in there and do. And I think if you highlighted that, you make it more important, you get more fans, people care about what's going on Sunday, you know, and you start building from there and hopefully a buzz start.
Yeah, great point. I want to ask you to talk a little bit about Evolve right now. I'm one of a diehard fan, and I know Evolve's been on my radar for a little while, but goodness, it feels like it's taken a huge upturn in popularity, goodness, in the last 4 or 5 months. You've been there since day one. What have you seen from Evolve?
Clearly, it's a company that's gone through some major changes over the 6.5 years that it's been around. And right now, I can't overstate the importance of the WWE acknowledging our existence. And allowing us and blessing a company with the Cruiserweight Series, with their Cruiserweight Classic qualifying matches, and allowing us to showcase that and propping up our athletes. You know, Dean Ambrose, Luke Harper, Ambrose Harper, you know, Apollo Crews, all these guys, Rich Swann, all came through Evolve at some point before they got to WWE. And I think that they're starting to see, and their fan base is going, with the internet now and everything else, they're going, well, where did this guy come from? And they're starting to see Evolve being a promotion these guys worked with. And you can't understate how that's, you can't overstate how important that was to the brand recognition, and the fact that the audience now cares about the guys that are mainstream guys, the guys that are big stars now. A lot of them came through our promotion to get where they're going to. And I think WWE acknowledged that. And I think that's allowing the fans to care about us and giving us a little bit of a mainstream rub. And now we're doing the best crowds we've done. We're going out to new markets. You know, we were in Joplin, Maryland last Friday. You know, we had our best crowd we've had in Queens. And New York is a hard entertainment dollar to get, because there's always something going on in New York. There's baseball games or hockey games or basketball games or Broadway plays or just, you know, hot women walking around the street that you want to go out to the bar and see. There's always something to do in New York that there's not other places. So to be able to have your best crowds ever in New York really states for the strength of the momentum the brand is gaining.
Are you surprised that WWE has given you guys the rub in the last, I don't know, 90 days, 6 months, whatever it would be?
I'm not surprised in the sense that I feel like it makes sense for them strategically business-wise, because your top talent or your most promising talent is coming from the same pool, and it's just better for your long-term health. Like, yeah, you can sit there and go, we have a performance center, we're gonna develop our own talent. That's awesome. You know, and you're going to nail on that a lot. It's going to happen. You're going to get some guys out of that. But why would you cut off a resource when you can prop up a resource? And it allows you to control a market and give people a destination to go that maybe aren't ready yet, but you want to get them ready and get them in a controlled environment. Because when you're out there on the independent scene, you're doing different style matches, you're doing longer matches, you're taking more riskier moves. By the time some of these guys are getting to WWE, that their bodies are already broken down. I mean, AJ Styles missed the weekend shows because he was back.
Yeah.
Because he's had 20-plus years of wrestling.
Daniel Bryan the same, yeah.
And doing a hard style out there, you know, because the style you have to do on an independent level to get over with an audience is different than what you do when you have a big TV production behind you. So you get these assets that are clearly ready for the big time and can make you a lot of money, but now they're coming in a little bit. They're fractured assets. They're not broken, but they're fractured. So if you can control and give them a hope, maybe then they'll wrestle a more controlled style and see the light at the end of the tunnel that maybe they didn't see a couple of years ago, where you just go balls to the wall to get yourself over, because that's how you make your money.
Good. Yeah, good point. Where is Evolve in 12 months from today? Where do you see the company?
I think it'll be the healthiest it's ever been. I really do. I think you're going to continue to see new talent, and I don't see us on, like, I don't think they'll make the mistake of trying to get a TV deal. You know, we're not going to try to get on, I don't see them trying to get on TV or anything like that, because it has to be right. I've seen so many promotions go on TV and it not work out, because it costs more money than you're making. But I do see them being extremely healthy, and hopefully I see the WWE relationship growing to the point where the company's just a major, major independent promotion and a destination promotion for both talent and fans to come see the best next athletes in wrestling. I really do believe that. I've believed that for 6 years, but now it's like I've seen 6 years of hard work and believing in something like really come to a level where I never thought it was going to be at, and that's something I can't even put into words. It's just like you have this little thing that you show up to and that you believe in, that you're going to, and it's like, oh, this is great. We got these great young wrestlers, and now it's like, holy crap, the whole wrestling world is talking about it.
Yeah, you say it's 6 years, but goodness, that's not a lot in wrestling time. That's pretty quick how quickly it's grown. I mean, it's pretty amazing, frankly.
Yeah, you know, it seems a little bit longer when you're
right.
You're the one with it, but like when it's one of those things. I think when it's all done, you know, and I'm not radio host, I'm not wrestling manager, I'm just some guy living somewhere, you know, probably barbecuing up a steak. And I'm going to sit back, you know, open up a beer with, like, one of your friends. I'm going to look back on it all and be like, man, like, what a ride that was, and I can't believe how far it went, you know, because you saw all the struggles and you saw all the negatives come and the fact you persevered and kept on going, and you saw the positives come too. It's one of those things, like, when you're in the moment so often, and I think a lot of people do this, especially people that are in the entertainment business, where you're literally always worried about your next move.
Right.
You never really sit down and take a look back on the whole entire run and just realize how amazing it is to be where you're at today. I think it's one of those things when you look back on it, you're like, man, like, we changed wrestling. Like, the wrestling business changed, and we were a major, major part of that.
That's cool. That's very, very cool. Larry, let's play a little game of rapid fire before I let you out of here, okay?
All right.
First question. Best wrestler, I don't know if theme music's the right word, but music, current day.
Oh, current day best music? I love Sasha Banks.
Yeah, I think that might be my winner, too. Although Shinsuke's new one's pretty good, too.
Yeah, no, Shinsuke's good, but Sasha Banks and Ricochet's theme on the Indies and in Japan White Ghetto. I forget who it's by, but it's called White Ghetto. Like YouTube, the Ricochet theme is amazing too.
All right, best music all time.
Oh, best music of all time. Badstreet USA.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a great one.
Badstreet USA was great, and Shawn Michaels was iconic too.
Yeah, that and Stone Cold's as well. Just a glass break. Yeah.
I'm going more like lyrically than like the ones that are just beats.
Right. Good point. So, strangest fan experience.
Strangest fan experience. Would have probably been in Japan because I'd be like when I'd get on like elevators and walk down the street, like because I was like a 6'1", 6'2" white dude with highlighted blonde hair. People would literally just come up and touch me. And like dudes were just like, I'd be standing next to him like in a convenience store or something like that, and a guy would just grab my arm and go, "Oh, big man!" I'm like, "Oh, thank you, nice to meet you too." And like I had no way of communicating it. It was just one of those weird things where like people would literally just touch you. And for as strange as America is at times, they didn't mean disrespect by it. So I don't want to like throw shade at the whole culture. It was just like that's just like their cult. They were just so amazed about the fact that it's like. But today was like this giant American just walking around, and they just felt comfortable enough to touch him because they don't see, you know, big bodied Americans over there. Like, I thought it was one of those really interesting, like one of those things where I was like, no one's gonna believe this 10 years from now, 15 years from now, when I'm just telling a story to somebody that doesn't know me.
Right.
But it's definitely like the strangest experience.
All right, best Dean Ambrose story you can share.
After the Peterson Cup. The Peterson Cup was, Jeff Peterson Cup was ran by Full Impact Pro down in Florida. So it was a group of people. It was me. It was Moxley at the time with Ambrose. Sammy Callahan. Rick Swann was in the car. A couple other people were in his car. And he had gotten busted open. And he was bleeding. And we didn't have a shower at the venue. And we had like a 20-hour drive back to New York afterwards. So his head is wrapped up in like athletic tape, and it's kind of like bleeding through. And we're driving down this port of Florida that has a bunch of speed traps, and it, like the speed limit goes from like 50 to 40 to 30 to 50 to 40 to 30, like literally like every light. And I'm not paying attention. I'm just trying to get on the road. So we get pulled over by this cop, and this cop comes up, and he looks in the car, and here's Ambrose looking like he just left a murder scene or a car fight. And the cop's like, "What in the hell happened to your head?" And it's like, "Oh, we're just pro wrestlers, sir." And like he was so like the cop was so like fortified by this bloody mess that was like in the passenger seat of the car. Like I thought for sure we were going to jail. Like I was like, "Okay, this is it. We're done. Like we're getting questioned on something." And like the cop let us go. But that was one of those like road stories that were just like, and that was my first time. That was my first real road trip. It was my first trip down anywhere. So the first road trip, so I'm the one driving the whole way through because I'm the rookie on the whole crew. But that was I will never forget that the bloodstained tape on the head and the look on his cop's face as he thought he just pulled over some guy's New York place. He's like, "What the hell did I just walk up to?
How did I get here? Similar question, but best Dave LaGreca story you can share.
Oh, best Dave LaGreca story, man. What is the best Dave LaGreca story? Just him. Like, I mean, God. I feel like I don't have like a great, great Dave LaGreca story because he doesn't really, because everything he's done, like you guys have seen, like, I mean, the guy got married in a wrestling ring.
I can't believe that happened.
Like he got married, like he found a beautiful woman to say I do in a wrestling ring at a wrestling training school. Like that's just, I don't think you can like, there's nothing I could ever bring up about like Dave LaGreca that could possibly top the fact the guy said I do in a wrestling ring.
And he had a match during, like, you know, the main, or whenever people are eating.
Yeah. Like, the whole thing makes no sense. I look back at it now, still, but the whole wedding makes no sense. Like, why'd I wear a suit?
Right. Why weren't you in trunks or jeans? I mean.
Yeah. It was awesome. And, like, and of course, Morton was the minister that married them.
Which is just another layer in the craziness of the whole story on top of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, He can do anything else he wants to do at this point. Like, nothing will ever top the fact that Morton married him in a wrestling ring.
That's true. That's a mic drop moment. Good point.
It's like you're done. Like, you peaked. You know, you've entered, as Bill Simmons would call it, the Tyson zone. We're like, there's anything you can do, I would believe happened. I'm like, oh, I can believe it.
Oh, wow. Next question. Name a few of the guys on the indies right now that are going to be superstars in 12 months, 24 months, you know, in the future.
Guys, I mean, obviously, you know, you have Gargano and Ciampa on NXT now. So, you know, they don't – I'll exclude them from the conversation. But I think Ethan Page is going to be a huge star. He's a kid out of Canada. I believe he's Official Ego on Twitter. I think he's going to be a huge, huge star. I think oh God, who are the kids that we saw this weekend? Fred Yehi from Evolve, he's going to be a really big star one day. Matt Riddle has all the talent in the world to be. He's a former Ultimate Fighter, former UFC fighter. He's taken to the business like a moth to a flame. He has all the intangibles to become a major star. And the guys from England, you know, Zack Sabre, you guys seen Cruiserweight Classic, Marty Scurll, Will Ospreay, obviously New Japan. The British talent right now is just at an all-time high. If you get a chance to check out some of the British wrestling stuff, like Progress Wrestling, and check out like Skrull and Tommy End and Ospreay and Zack Sabre, I mean, those guys are just an absolute treat and joy to watch wrestle.
I was talking with somebody from Europe last weekend, and they were saying that pro wrestling is as big over there. It's like the second biggest sport besides soccer.
It was, listen, there's a lot of guys making full-time livings wrestling just in Europe right now, yeah.
It was crazy to me, and the guy was blowing my mind, so. Final question for you. Mm-hmm. Favorite all-time New York Met?
My favorite all-time New York Met is probably... I always like Mookie Wilson because I like the name Mookie.
Sure.
You know, and I really didn't even get to see him play that much. I just always liked the name, like Mookie is just Mookie. Gary Carter's up there for me, too. Mm. But, man, that's a hard question, man.
I would have put money on you and Lenny Dykstra.
Yeah, I don't understand. I get Keith Hernandez and Ron Darling doing the broadcasting of every game. So, like Keith has really gone up my list, too, as far as like an all-time favorite, Matt. But I think when it's all said and done, one of these pitchers or even Cespedes is probably going to become my all-time favorite.
Wow, that's saying something.
Yeah, because I mean I love Cespedes so much because of what he did. If this team wins a World Series in the next year or two, it's Cespedes or one of those pitchers is going to go right up to the top.
Mm, good point, Larry. Thank you so much for your time today. I've had a real blast talking baseball with you, and then picking your brain about pro wrestling. Such a big fan of your work, both in Evolve and on Busted Open. I really want to give you a spot here to plug anything and everything, your Twitter and anything you want to plug.
Yeah, man, my Twitter account is Larry Dallas, WWN. That's for World Wrestling Network, which coincidentally is where you can find all the Evolve shows and old Dragon Gate USA shows, either our live shows when we have a live show or on demand at WWNlive.com. That's World Wrestling Network, WWNlive.com. And then obviously, I mean, you can hear me, you know, most days as the go-to Philly host for Busted Open Radio, which you can also follow at Busted Open Radio on Twitter with my great co-host Dave LaGreca and the legendary Doug Mortman, as he calls him. And those are basically the places to find me. I'm very personable on social media, so if you reach out, you have a question, or if you just want to, you know, tell me what an idiot I am, by all means, tweet me, and I'm always happy to respond to anyone that's interested in talking.
Well, thank you so much. I really don't know how you got the name the most hated man in pro wrestling. You've been such a nice guy. I don't know how you got that rep.
Because I'm as charming as I can be. I know how to turn it on the other way really easily.
You can go full heel real quick.
Okay, listen, man, it's just... When you can smile and talk, maybe you can go either way most of the time, you know?
Very, very, very true. Very cool. Larry, thank you so much, man. Big fan, and I hope to have you on sometime later this year, hopefully when the Nats have beat the Mets.
Hey, as we get closer to playoff time, we'll definitely link up and see where things are.
Definitely. Let's do it. Thank you again.
Thank you.
And that was episode 68 of the Nats GM show with Larry Dallas. As I said, the most hated man in pro wrestling, although I don't know how he's gotten that reputation. So I want to thank him for coming on and talking the Mets, previewing the upcoming couple series they've got with the Nats, and also talking some pro wrestling. So thank you very much. That was a lot of fun for me. I hope you guys enjoyed that as well. With that, episode 68 is a wrap. Bye for now.